What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar, and today we have a special interview episode for you from CES. I got a chance to sit down with the folks behind the streaming video service Quibi, which we've been hearing about for the past year or so, and it's really interesting because it is a mobile-only video streaming premium service that you'll have to pay for. But what's also fascinating is that they've raised over $1 billion of funding, and they plan to raise another $1 billion. And it has some big names behind it, including Jeffrey Katzenberg, the studio head and producer who's well-known in Hollywood, and Meg Whitman as the CEO, who used to be the CEO of HP. They also managed to amass a pretty large amount of star talent, including Steven Spielberg and director Guillermo del Toro, a lot of celebrities too on their shows, like Chrissy Teigen. Basically, we can see where this money is being spent. I sat down with both of them to have them explain their vision for the service and how it's different from everything else out there. And apologies for the sound of this recording. I had to put our recorder on a table, and there's a lot of banging and other noise, but I think you can still get a sense of what everyone's saying.
Oh, maybe we'll just do a quick overview, and then we'd love to answer your questions. Mm-hmm. So as you know, there's been a long history in Hollywood of technology enabling new ways to tell stories. Mm-hmm. And so what we just started out to do was bring together the best of Hollywood and the best of Silicon Valley to create a unique mobile viewing experience mm-hmm. with premium quality content for on-the-go viewing, which, of course, led us to then say, we need to have nothing longer on Quibi than 10 minutes. Now, it might be a two-hour movie in chapters, mm-hmm. but each session length should be no longer than 10 minutes. And so Jeffrey and I got together in March of 2018, and we've been building the company, and you'll see tomorrow when you come to the keynote the talent that we've got, the terrific quality of the content, and a new technology platform that enables mobile viewing to look fantastic here. So we think about it as script-to-screen innovation. The content needs to be shot differently for mobile, and obviously the technology does some things that are pretty magical.
Gotcha. And the idea is vertical formatted, like telling stories that way?
It's portrait to landscape.
Okay.
You'll see the demo of it's seamless, full-screen, portrait to landscape. Mm-hmm. And
so that's your option.
Okay.
You watch it any way you want to.
Okay.
It just needs to look great no matter what, and you'll see it in the next.
Are the producers being guided in any particular way, like to make sure it's always framed good for portrait but also landscape?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've now created a very detailed kind of playbook, if you will, based on this first year of some of the best filmmakers, and you're going to get to meet a few of them here this afternoon. And, you know, they were sort of the pioneers that not only showed us the way, but themselves the way. So it was a really pretty phenomenal discovery process.
Gotcha.
The learning curve was fast and steep, and but boy, they just did an amazing job.
And is it only mobile viewing? Will you guys have any like desktop or TV viewing?
No, not at launch.
Okay. Is that something you're thinking about eventually, or how to position it?
You know, when you see the technology, you will see how important it is to be able to go portrait to landscape seamlessly, and you can't take a TV and do this.
Well, Samsung just announced
yeah, I heard
one,
that.
Which is the craziest thing I've ever seen. But
until you see what we've done, and then you go, maybe they were anticipating us.
They might. They might have been.
They've known what we've been up to for 2 years, so wouldn't surprise
me. Gotcha. And can you guys give me a sense of how does the platform work? So you launch Quibi, you're seeing content that's curated for you. Can you download things for offline viewing? Mm-hmm. How flexible is it?
Yeah, you can do instant download for anything that you want to watch. So let's say you're in New York and you get on the subway.
Yeah.
And you can download the night before, or you can download, you know, right at that instant moment. And honestly, it's built for this on-the-go use case.
Can you set up like schedules for this? I like the show every morning, make sure it's loaded on my device.
Well, we have a watching feature
on
the device so that, you know, it'll alert you when the next episode of whatever it is that you're watching is ready to go.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just talking to people in Hollywood and in the media industry, I think you guys have been working on one of the, I think, most unique ideas for a while, and people have been hearing about the funding and they're just wondering, where is all that going?
Right.
Is it all going to this original content?
The two biggest expenditures are content,
first
and foremost, and second is marketing.
Okay.
Because we have to actually tell people about Quibi.
Yes.
It's an unknown brand, unlike, you know, Disney or Warner Media, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's a completely different use case. Because people, when they first hear Quibi, they think, oh, it's another streaming platform.
Yep.
It is. but it is mobile only, and it's a completely different use case. So we have to tell that story to customers.
Gotcha. And subscription, all freemium? How are you guys thinking?
No, it's $4.99 a month, ad-supported, $7.99 a month, ad-free. And every new user that signs up, there'll be a two-week free trial, all-you-can-eat free trial.
Excellent. And you guys mentioned making this something geared towards millennial viewers. Mm-hmm. I do think, just like talking to a lot of my younger family, people don't really watch self-contained shows anymore, right? They may have a YouTube channel they like to follow, or just like little bits of content. Is that you want it to feel like that? You want it to feel more like YouTube rather than I'm sitting down and watching, you know, The Office at Thursday or something?
I think it's here's the thing.
Yep.
No one knows.
Yeah.
And all I can offer to you is my own experience, mm-hmm. since I've probably now watched more of this than anybody else on planet Earth. And all I can say is that it's not like any other place. It's not like YouTube or TikTok or Snapchat or broadcast TV or streaming, you know, Netflix or Disney Plus. They're all great, by the way. There's nothing wrong with any of them. This is different. And the immersiveness of this, the sort of
engagement.
How do I say it? It's just the connection that you have when you're watching this content. One, you know it's for 5 or 6 or 7 minutes, so it's for a define. It's just captivating. It's immersive, and and I think it's captivating in a way that's unlike anything else we've done before.
Excellent.
There's also, you asked what kind of content are people going to watch. There's three kinds. I think we have quite a unique content strategy.
Okay.
There are movies in chapters, so they could be a 150-minute movie in 10-minute chapters. And I'll give you the best example would people go, okay, I got it. The Da Vinci Code in written form is 464 pages and 105 chapters. Every chapter is 5 pages long because Dan Brown, 18 years ago, said, I don't think people have 45 minutes to read anymore, so you've got 5 minutes. I want you to read one chapter. So that's why. But there's nothing lesser about the Da Vinci Code, the plot, the writing, everything. And there's nothing lesser about the movies we're making except the delivery in chapters. And then we have non-scripted, unscripted, episodic shows and documentaries that you don't necessarily have to watch in any particular order. Chrissy Teigen is a perfect example. She's done 18 episodes of Chrissy's Court.
Nice.
No claim is too small.
Okay.
And then finally, I think one of the most innovative things we're doing is this notion of daily essentials. And you might talk a little bit about what you.
Well, it's just right now, information and news is ubiquitously available on this, but it's not curated and it's not convenient. So you can find out anything you want to know, but you actually have to initiate it. So what we're doing is taking the world of information and curating that and professionally producing it. And so in Quibis, five-minute, six-minute pieces, there's news headlines, sports headlines, weather, horoscope, TMZ, literally 25 shows, not all of which are going to be of interest to you, but several of which are. And those things will be habitual. Those are the things you'll come to every day, we think, and will be of value. So the curation of information and news, we think, is a very high value part of what we're offering our customers.
Gotcha. And will known brands like TMZ, are they taking their existing content and refashioning it?
No, they're commissioning new content.
Okay.
So we're taking their funnel, so their news gathering apparatus, and then actually creating a new product out of it. So NBC is actually producing a brand new show with different hosts, different set, different editorial, very focused 25 to 35-year-old millennial audience. So everything about it will feel sort of broadcast and sort of strong in its quality and in its authenticity and the reach of a worldwide global news gathering organization. But what they produce will be produced exclusively for Quibi.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you. Excited to see what it looks like.
Next up, I talked with Tom Conrad, the Chief Product Officer of Quibi, and Rob Post, the Chief Technology Officer. And you may recognize Tom Conrad's name. He was a Chief Product Executive at Pandora for a while. He moved over to Snapchat. He is somebody who's definitely been thinking hard about how media works and how people consume it in new formats and on new devices.
So you just spent some time with Megan Jeffrey?
Yep.
Good. So I'm the chief product officer. Rob is our chief technology officer.
Mm-hmm.
We've both been here since essentially the beginning, about a little over a year now. And, you know, I think as Meg started to describe to you, Rob and I feel like it's our responsibility to create a platform for this content that's as innovative and inspiring as the creators that Jeffrey are bringing into the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And we think of, like, the best way into that is to create a dialogue between creators and product people and engineering people inside Quibi, really kind of every day.
Okay.
If you think a little bit about how the model has traditionally worked, you know, someone writes a script, producers gets attached, they cast it, they find a director, they shoot it, they edit it, they color correct it, and then they put it on a file server somewhere, and a streaming service or a broadcast network or a cable company comes along, takes the content, and distributes it to their audiences.
Mm-hmm.
That process doesn't afford any opportunity for the app developers, for example, that put the content out of the world to talk to the creators. And because all of the content that we're making for Quibi is original for our platform and built from the ground up for our use case, we can have those conversations, and we're having them every day.
Okay.
I'll give you one example. About a year ago, Steven Spielberg came in, and we were giving him an update on Quibi, and he says, I have this horror anthology idea that I've been working on for some time, and I'd really like to make the episodes only available when it's dark out.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Yeah.
And there's some creative executives in the room and some engineers in the room, and one of the creative executives kind of chimes in and says, Steven, I think we can do that. We'll put it up at midnight East Coast time, and that'll be 9 o'clock West Coast time, and so it'll be dark, you know, when it goes up. And Steven kind of nods, and we're about ready to move on. And the engineers are like, but, and of course, you know, we explained to him that we know where you are, we know what time of day it is, we know when the sun sets on this particular day, and that we can make the content magically unlock when the sun dips below the horizon. And what's more, when the sun comes back up in the morning, we can melt the digital film on screen like a vampire getting caught in a ray of sunshine and tell the viewer to come back when it's dark out to watch the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Spielberg has been inventing the future in cinema since I was a boy.
Yeah.
His reaction to this is like, he can't believe it. He's like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard. You can do that. And it's just, for me, it was this light bulb moment where, in the same way that what Steven Spielberg does like seems magic to me, you know, what Rob and his team does seems magic to Steven. And so we started having these conversations on a regular basis. And the one of the things that we're revealing at the show is kind of something that came from those conversations. And
they give us a deeper dive into what I think is the biggest and most interesting innovation from Quibi, and that's a feature called Turnstile. It's what lets you watch a mobile video both in portrait mode and landscape mode. And the service is built entirely around this technology. So you could move the video as you see fit. You could do it for some interactivity in some shows and movies. It's a really fascinating thing, and it's a really new way of using mobile screens.
We devised a new format that takes a bespoke landscape cut and a completely independent portrait cut, unified by a single soundtrack, and present them to the user kind of simultaneously that lets you shift in back and forth.
Have you guys talked about this much before? I don't remember hearing about this switching.
We have not. This is the big product news for us at the show. And so we have a little demo app. Turn the phone there.
Nice, okay.
And so you can just turn the phone, you know, as you see fit. There's a couple of cool things about this. First, it works at all. Rob's going to tell you about how in the world we did that. And then the second is, go back to portrait here for a second. Like,
it's framed, right?
It's really gorgeous, too. Like, when I saw this for the first time, I was like, oh my god, no one has ever made super premium portrait video before. We see all this UGC stuff in portrait. But, you know, kind of this Hollywood-level production values are really unique.
Do they have to shoot it twice?
So the interesting thing about this is that the final deliverable to us is in fact an independent portrait and landscape edit. But what often is the mechanism that gets them there is they shoot like 8K landscape, maybe pull back 15% from what they might have normally shot, which gives them this whole canvas then to edit from to create their portrait experience. That's turnstile. We call this format. Rob, you want to talk about what
you
have to make
it? When the product and design teams came to us with mocks of this, my heart kind of sank. Because in a streaming video environment, and I've been doing this for maybe 10 years or more, you really don't have that much leeway, right? You're streaming the bits to the phone, and what's really important to make that work is to ensure that when you rotate the phone, it's like super snappy.
Sure.
Like that's the number one concern that you need to have with this type of experience. So we thought maybe in the beginning, and this is some of the conversational things, thought maybe in the beginning we could just like center crop and you can easily think of situations, even with the content you saw here, where that's not going to work very well. And it's going to take away from effective storytelling.
And do you feel like the filmmakers have to think both, horizontally?
Well, that's
and
the breakthrough.
That frame.
Like you want the creators to be able to ensure that their story is being told, which kind of eliminates the FOMO. Like,
right.
You know, what am I missing if I'm not in the right orientation?
Because there's not a right orientation.
There's not.
That's the thing.
Right.
You do kind of have to wrap your head around that as a viewer on Quibi. Like,
there
is not a right answer. Both are equally compelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then we're like, okay, well, maybe we could, like, really apply some technology to this. Let's, like, use AI and machine learning to kind of find the areas of focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the person that's talking, or this is the area of focus because there's an explosion happening here. We could pan and do that ourselves. And we had some success for that, but again, here, we didn't think it was always going to be able to deliver a premium video experience.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we got to the point where, like, okay, two edits. Let's let the creators choose what the viewers should see. So now I'm faced with, all right, I have to stream these down to the phone, and I want that experience to be smooth, really seamless between the two orientations. So we experimented with many different implementations, and what we found is, essentially, the best user experience was to stitch together this portrait edit and this landscape edit and kind of take advantage of some encoding efficiencies, package them together as one, have a single audio track so there's no pops or blips or any challenges when you're rotating the phone. And then ultimately, we're able to deliver that down to the device.
Are you
so
pushing
you think,
twice as much video data?
No,
okay.
No, absolutely not. So think of it as like we're kind of sidecar loading some extra bits such that when you're rotating the phone, it's like ready to go. It's there for you right away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially the solution that we invented to handle this problem, and it's the basis of our patent portfolio.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it's really optimized around the user experience of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say this is really just the tip of the iceberg on what we would like to do by creating a platform for these storytellers to evolve the way that they're able to tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using the gyroscope, obviously, in this scenario.
Yeah.
What would happen if maybe we gave them access to the camera?
Uh-huh.
Like, what could they do with it now that they had access to the camera? What could they do if they had access to the haptics or
sure.
the location or touchscreen? Or, like, all these things can now create maybe a slightly interactive show or
yeah.
a slightly
yeah.
social show for things.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the example that Tom shared about Steven Spielberg is a really good one. Because as the technologist, you can take an idea so far. But once it gets into the hands of the creators, they like blow your mind with what they're able to do next.
Yeah.
So our ambition is to be able to kind of unlock some of these capabilities of the platform for them to tell better stories or more engaging stories or et cetera, et cetera.
Cool.
And I think that's the exciting part for me as a technologist because now the actual technology matters. Like, we're tying some of this storytelling into the capabilities of what's possible on a phone.
It reminds me of the old school interactive video games as well, like even like Dragon's Lair or something.
Oh,
like,
sure, sure.
It's not just streaming video. You guys have created this something where the viewer is involved.
That's really
that's
the opportunity, right,
okay.
is to figure out how to do that. And frankly, how to do it in a way that's not just a choose-your-own-adventure that happens sort of like naturally.
During the show, Sherlyn also got to talk with the CEO of Lioness, a sex tech company that's been really working hard to fight for equal footing at CES over the past couple of years. This is a really fascinating look at how the conference is changing and how I think CES is maybe getting less sexist. I'm not quite sure, but I will let Sherlyn take it away from here.
Her name is Liz Klinger, and Lioness makes a biosensing vibrator, which is one of the finalists for a Last Gadget Standing tournament here at CES 2020. And this is controversial because the CTA has had a very fraught relationship with sex tech at CES for a long time. Last year, it all culminated when the CTA rescinded an award that it had initially given to a device called the OSA, made by another company called Laura DiCarlo. I'm very fortunate to have Liz Klinger, again, the CEO and founder of Lioness, here to tell her story.
Yeah, it's been a whole journey, because when we first launched Lioness about 2 years ago, yeah, as Sherlyn said, we weren't able to get a booth at CES officially. And it was a big bummer because we were really excited about what we were doing. And when we were kind of going back and forth with the CTA, they alluded to not wanting to have any new sex tech products because, you know, that there's a few other companies that have been grandfathered in before. But that year we saw that there was a large VR porn setup at the show that was new, and we're like, wait a second, where is this line being drawn? Like, this, you know, something doesn't feel right here. As we dug further into it, we found that we were not the only company that was facing this. It was pretty much all new sex tech companies in this past decade, for the most part, that weren't allowed into the show. And that was kind of ridiculous for us. So we ended up, because CES is a huge gatekeeper in terms of like what technology is discovered by people, they determine what is sort of like trending topics for that year in terms of technology. It's so important, especially for sex tech, because it's a topic that a lot of people are not going to just openly talk about as much as other topics. So by having a platform for it at the largest technology show in the world, it really, you know, it makes sense that it should be there, especially with all the innovations that have been happening in the last decade.
As Laura DiCarlo was going through its ordeal with the CTA, Liz was watching from the sidelines as it all unfolded, and obviously it struck a chord with her, and this is what she felt.
It's frustrating because we're working on devices at the end of the day, and it's all made out of the same types of materials and the, you know, same sort of processes as any other product out there, whether it be a phone or a tablet, a TV, what, you know, whatever it might be. It was really frustrating, but also I think the change, it was a long time coming, because it's something that, like, I mean, talking to people in shows prior, there's a lot of people who've been here who are frustrated that companies like Lioness, like Laura DiCarlo, like everyone else who's here was not able to show, especially ones that are doing something a little bit different in the space, because CES is all about innovation. And it should be not just like innovation in a very few categories. And also it's ended up, for at least for some people, stereotyping it. It's like it kind of becomes the same thing year in, year out. And people come here to see what's new and what's interesting and what's an opportunity for them, whether for whatever field they're coming from. So
what exactly is the Lioness 2 and why is it here at CES? Liz, tell us all about the biosensing vibrator that her company made.
So Lioness uses precision sensors and biofeedback to show a person's arousal and orgasm. And the thing that's the different significant thing with Gen 2 is that there's now AI-assisted guidance with the experience, because what we were finding was that a lot of people had questions about, like, how to improve their experience, how do they know if they had an orgasm sometimes, what is an orgasm, where are they getting close?
I was curious about whether the CTA corralled all of the sex tech gadgets that it was displaying. It was nice, actually, according to Klinger, that they were all basically dispersed among the health and gadgets category. that's a lot better than even just a few years back when tech for moms and women were just hidden away in a corner somewhere.
The way that it's been displayed and talked about at CES has changed a lot over the years. Like a couple years ago, I think like we're looking at like 2016 about, there was like the technology that was geared towards mothers that was like in a completely different section of the show. Like it was not on the main show floor. And one of my friends who was there, who was a founder of another company, he literally called it the baby ghetto.
No.
Yeah, because that's where all the like mother and
baby. All the baby things are.
Yeah. And like, I don't know why they set it up that way, but like having all the like mother stuff. And also it was like a lot of stuff, not just for moms, even though it was called that, but it was stuff for women too, like nail polish, it's like a 3D printed nail polish.
Manicuring thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, okay, so you're stuffing a lot of women's stuff in the mother section in a separate room at the CES show floor, and it's not part of the rest of the show.
Right.
Like, I think it's not just sex stuff, mm-hmm. Though that's a part of it, and for the sex tech stuff to some degree. It's also just the way that people have seen technology that's more women-centric. Like, it's been a kind of weird – it's been handled weirdly in the past. It's gotten better over time now that there is more the women's stuff, quote unquote, is more integrated in the show now than it had been at that time. But that's like 2016.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago.
It's important, of course, for the CTA to recognize sex tech as a category because it legitimizes the entire industry there. Liz is going to explain further why personally for Lioness is important as well.
I think it's important for Lioness and other sex tech companies to be at the show officially because versus the times that we have been there unofficially, this year we've gotten a lot of people reaching out to us, whether it's press or media or, well, press, investors, retailers, other people who are just curious about what we do, who have been reaching out to us before the show even started because we are on the directory. They can find us. They can search for us. It's not something that they're going to have to dig through or just like happen to come upon this booth at the right time when they're curious and have a few minutes to see what's going on. They can prepare beforehand. And they'll know that we exist. Now it's this large major platform where more people know that, hey, there's this thing called sex tech. Like, you know, maybe I should look into it. What the heck is this thing? And that's awesome because it's so difficult for sex tech companies to be able to get the word out through normal means. Like we're not companies that can do a lot of the typical advertising that other e-commerce companies or other companies like your Caspers and your Birchboxes and your whatever, you know, cool new direct-to-consumer companies out there can do. So yeah, this has been a huge change.
It's kind of understandable why there's a lot of stigma around sex tech. People are iffy about it, squeamish, don't want to talk about it. But just as erectile dysfunction can be a check engine light for men's health, women's arousal can also be an early indicator of something wrong in women's overall health.
When Viagra and Cialis came out, more men were going to the doctor, but then also the doctors, when their patients asked for the blue pill, they knew to check not only for like blood flow issues down there, but also overall blood flow issues, and it helped cut back the risk of cardiovascular health issues or, you know, heart attack risk for men. But the crazy thing is, there isn't an equivalent for women. Like, it deserves a look, I think, because there's some differences, but arousal and blood flow is not going to be a huge difference. And it's something that I've been kind of encountering a little bit on a case-by-case basis with a few folks. There's some people who have issues with whether it's congenital heart defects or they've had a heart attack before. I've also reported having difficulties having an orgasm.
That is awesome. Cheers to kicking down doors and opening, you know, rooms for conversation on prickly subjects sometimes, I guess.
Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Sherlyn.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of the Engadget podcast straight out of CES 2020. We'll be back next week with more as we process and digest everything that we learned here at the show.